Welcome to Startup Health Now, the weekly webcast celebrating healthcare transformers and change makers reimagining healthcare. My name is Unity Stokes, and today we have a very exciting guest, Missy Krasner, the Managing Director of Healthcare at Box.
Yep.
It's great to have you here.
Looking forward
to a great show.
Yeah, excited to be here.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. The future is to those who take it.
So welcome back to Startup Health Now. Missy, it's great to see you here. We're actually at JP Morgan Healthcare Conference 2015. How are you?
I'm great. It's a busy conference. It's great to see so many digital health companies finally breaking into this sort of incumbent big banking conference.
How many years have you been coming to this conference?
JP Morgan, you know, actually, when I was an investor with Morgan Thaler Ventures, I came for 2 years straight. Prior to that, when I was at Google, we came because we had presenting sort of in a lot of different ways. But I'll tell you, it's primarily been a life sciences conference until about 2 years ago when
it's really changed a lot.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. They added emerging health track, digital health track. So we're seeing great companies like Doximity present, Apixio, Athena Health has been here for a while. This is a big deal because this is a hardcore publicly traded CEOs come out from hospitals and pharma. So it's a big deal that we're now starting to see the digital health kind of contingency here. You know?
Do you think that's a big signal to really what's going on in the market in general in healthcare?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at any segment, whether it's pharma, I mean, pharma has been really starting to get interested in patient engagement, medication adherence, and sort of the whole digital health information therapy sort of piece. And that's taken them a little while to get there, but clearly you guys have been doing a ton of work with pharma as well. And then, of course, you know, provider and payer have been there for a while. But I definitely think that, you know, digital health is a little bit now the kind of the trendy girl that you want to hang out with at the party, you know?
Do you see it as a sort of flash in the pan trend or something that is coming into its own now? Digital health I'm referring to.
Yeah, I think that we still need a little work to really show that it's not just a kind of hot, trendy, come into style kind of thing, particularly in the Silicon Valley with all the VCs that are on Sand Hill Road. I mean, you see Andreessen now making investments in this space. See a lot of the newer funds that were total consumer internet or enterprise now moving into health IT, which they never even would have a conversation in the past. So it's trendy. And until we have some really good, hearty exits that are in line with valuations, not overly valuated, or IPOs that are still sort of, we're still all sort of looking at, but real sort of three or four good exits, I think that then, you know, we'll sort of be out of the bubble. We might have to course correct a little bit.
Do you think it's a bubble?
I do. I think it's a bubble primarily here in California and some of the companies that have been invested in. I think where you guys are headquartered out of the East Coast, it's a little bit more realistic. I think folks are not just investing in teams and or ideas, but they're sort of investing in a real business model and they need to see returns. At least a lot of the VC firms that we've talked to in the past when I was doing Morgan Thaler Ventures, which is now Canvas Venture Partners, they just have a sort of a different criteria for how they're going to invest. And I'm curious if you're finding that as well, since you guys are out there.
I think what we're seeing, we're seeing it more as a global phenomenon. We're seeing interesting companies come out of Israel, India, China even. So we don't see it as a bubble at all because we're looking across so many different regions. But I think in certain areas, the valuations are high. You wonder, gosh, if there's no real traction, why is it valued that way? But I think it's important to look at the context of the region and really what the solution is. But from our perspective, we think it's very, very early still. It reminds us very much of 95 internet still. But we're still very hopeful and optimistic that it's moving in a very, very exciting direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I'm currently with Box now. I left the venture world and I'm now heading up healthcare and life sciences at Box. And it's really interesting because we've seen a lot of horizontal technology companies, you know, companies that offer an enterprise solution or some kind of solution, but that is a horizontal. Mm. And we've seen this a lot here in the Valley, whether it's Cisco or Intel or Google even or Microsoft. You see a lot of players that want to enter into healthcare. And I think, you know, I did this at Google for 5 years with Google Health. It was. Yeah,
could you explain how you got into healthcare
yeah.
and what you did at Google? Because I think there's so much of that foundation that is now relevant today and really impacted what's going on today.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm happy to do that. I think that the point that I wanted to make is if you still see companies like a Salesforce.com or a Box going into healthcare as a vertical and trying to figure out how to make their platforms available to the startups as a distribution mm-hmm. model, that's really a good sign because it's not just you know, young, fun startups that have sort of great apps. You've actually got some folks that are really established still in the industry that are trying to actually make a play at this space. And we've seen that movie before, and we hope that it's actually not a repeat of some of the, you know, folks that did it before. But yes, I did this for 5 years at Google when we first tried to build Google Health. That was Google's first attempt
right.
in healthcare. They're clearly doing a lot of great things now in life sciences and diagnostics.
That was very early.
Very early. That was like, you know, gosh, I left ONC. So for those of you that don't know the acronyms, you know, the Office for the National Coordinator for Health IT, I was there with David Brailer, who was the very first national coordinator, got recruited to Google, did 5 years, about 2005 to 2011 on trying to build Google Health, which was, you know, essentially a patient portal, a PHR.
So you knew that there was this need even back then. It was just obvious.
Yeah.
But it was also early.
It was very early. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of people were putting their bets on Google. Microsoft was entering the space with Health Vault. Google was entering the space with Google Health. We had, the folks that from Dossia who were doing something with the big employers.
It was the first Health 2.0 sort of companies coming out. Patients Like Me. And
absolutely.
Others.
Yeah. Patients Like Me was just born in that era. 23andMe had just gotten funded.
Yeah.
Navigenics had just gotten funded. Revolution Health had just gotten funded right. with Steve Case. And so I think really we didn't have the kind of platforms that we have available today. We didn't have social. We didn't have the platforms that plug into social and mobile. So, you know, today Google has Google
Plus.
And we
also didn't have health reform.
Oh, we didn't have health reform, which was a big incentive to sort of start aligning, you know, payment reform mm-hmm. around sort of, you know, anybody that wanted to actually do a hospital discharge solution or some kind of pop health around cohort analysis, that's something that hospitals will look at now because of some of the things around Medicare, you know, not paying if you have a return within 30 days.
So it's interesting. You sound very optimistic, like the timing's much better for digital health.
Yep.
But then you also think it's a bubble. How do you sort of weigh those, or do you think they work together or not?
I think they do. I mean, so I think what happens is you know, we've gotten a lot more credibility in this space out of the bubble in that there's been a lot of new entrepreneurs that come from tech, come from much more traditional consumer internet experiences. A great example would be, you know, I mean, Owen Tripp, who is the CEO of Grand Rounds. He's a classic example of someone who built a company called Reputation.com, had a great, you know, great time building up that company, got interested in healthcare personally, and, you know, Venrock funded them, and now he's doing something in the second opinion space. So we've had great talent enter the space because of the bubble.
Oftentimes out of healthcare.
Oh, very often out of healthcare. And, you know, that's great because that kind of talent can really attract great healthcare incumbents, but also bring sort of a new fresh outlook to solving kind of the same problems that we've been looking at over and over and over again. So I feel like it's good. The only thing that I think we will course correct on is that just some of the earlier investments and even investments in the last year, you know, some of the early leaders have just gotten out in front of themselves around valuation because it's sort of a darling space. Mm-hmm. But that's not bad. It's just, you know, the market will
and
bear that out.
Still in the private markets that these valuations are high. It's not
absolutely
in the public markets.
It's not in the public markets. Public markets will sort of course correct on their own, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to you that the largest technology companies and some of the most interesting ones like Box are focusing so much on healthcare now and thinking Apple as an example, the Samsungs of the world, and even Box.
Yep. Yeah.
Focusing on healthcare, what does that say to you or signal to you?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I got a call from Aaron Levy, the CEO of Box, about a year and a half ago. I was a Box user at Morgan Thaler Ventures, using it to do diligence and look at startups and deal with external legal when we were funding deals. So I was like a power user. Mm-hmm. And when I got the call, it was primarily because Aaron had already had a very large footprint of healthcare and life science customers using Box already. And if you think about next generation collaboration tools or any kind of collaboration, healthcare doesn't do it well, right? Whether you're inside the enterprise or you're trying to collaborate with external parties that you're doing business with every day. And when you get an ACO environment, you start getting sort of some of the things that came out of payment reform with ACA, it gave us a lift. And so Aaron was like, look, I have a bunch of people that used to work for me, used to work at Google, now here at Box. Your name's come up a couple times from Google Health. I got a lot of customers asking about meaningful use, portals. I'd love to have a conversation with you just to sort of get your feedback on that. And that was sort of the beginning of a very adventurous change in careers. And I'll tell you, it is unbelievable how fast the healthcare and life sciences vertical at Box has grown. It's grown. Literally, our lift has been almost sixfold since I've joined. And it's an easy sell because people just essentially want to collaborate better and they want to be HIPAA compliant when they're doing it.
Compliance, yeah. Interesting. And so you've also been a VC. You've worked in venture capital. Maybe for the entrepreneurs out there that are just getting started, what's some of the advice or wisdom that you often share with entrepreneurs that are just getting going, focusing on digital health?
Yeah, I do a lot of mentoring. I'm still mentoring around town a lot. And I think one of the things that I learned, I was at Morgan Thaler Ventures for 2 years, mainly as an EIR, but had the opportunity to do three investments when I was there, which is, you know, rather rare for a mixed fund. They're pretty aggressive in health IT. What I would say is you need to actually really work the relationship over time. So a lot of young entrepreneurs will come in and pitch and sort of think that they're going to get an answer in the next 2 or 3 weeks on the pitch. And what I'm seeing, particularly on Sand Hill Road in general, it's not just Morgan Thaler, but I'm seeing it with almost all the firms, is that you really need to actually work up a relationship. So I'll give you a great example. You know, it took us 2 years to do HealthLoop, which is a patient engagement platform when we were at Morgan Thaler.
Jordan's company,
yeah. Right. We looked at them early days when Jordan was just forming the company and had sort of a minimally viable product. Then they participated in our annual startup competition, DC to VC, yeah. Which you guys have been involved with and have been a judge. They were a finalist there. We took another look at them. And then finally, a year later, when they hired an operational CEO who's fantastic, Todd Johnson, and really started making some headway on creating a full go-to-market strategy, that's when they got the Series A.
What are you looking for over time as you're building that relationship?
Yeah, three things, and they're very important. One is you have to have an MVP. Particularly for a Series A. So for us, you know, we're Series A, Series B folks at Morgan Thaler. And I say us because I sort of still have two hats. I'm at Box full time, but I still advise for Morgan Thaler /Canvas. You know, it's very difficult unless you're dealing with a CEO that's already had a very, very exciting exit. He's led a huge team or he's had an IPO. That's when people will write checks before you even have a product built. But for us, you know, you'll come in very early. You might be sort of seed stage, you've got, you know, the remnants of sort of a product, you're still in development, you have a dummy demo, but you're not out yet.
Right.
We really like it when you've got an MVP and you got a couple pilots. I don't care if they're paid, I don't care if they're free, but someone's got to be banging on the product and you have to have one or two folks that we can reference in the diligence to just give us feedback on where is it? Even if the product is still very minimal, it's really difficult, particularly if you're doing something in care coordination or patient engagement or even telehealth, which is really noisy right now. You need a couple references. And over time, that's what happens. You meet someone, you kind of get their vision, you get their deck. Then 6 months later, maybe they've signed a pilot, but it's still too early to diligence. And another 6 months later, they've been using the product for 3 months. We can call and really get an understanding of what they're doing. So that would be the first thing is MVP pilots.
Get the MVP, get some initial traction.
Right. The second thing would be you got to get a team. So a lot of folks that come in, it's two founders. It's sort of a technical person and a business person. and they outsource all their engineering and dev to another country. That makes us very nervous. We want an eng lead. Mm-hmm. You can do that if you're just trying to get an app.
You can't outsource that if you're going to have a great product.
Right. So that's a big kind of flaw that we see when we see early companies. You got to get an eng lead, and that eng lead's got to hire one or two people internally to your company because you need to control the product.
You want them to be in the same physical location?
I mean, that's always ideal, but you know, we know talent is very expensive in the Silicon Valley. So, you know, oftentimes there'll be someone in Boston or Massachusetts or Maine or what have you. But as long as that person is someone we can meet, we can talk to, and they're full time, they don't have another job, right? They're fully in. So that's the third thing, is it's not just team. It's really, really having that roundabout business lead, tech lead, and someone who, you know, may...
How about healthcare experience?
You know, I'm personally much more biased towards having one person who's got healthcare experience. I think that our firm, Morgan Thaler Ventures and Canvas, was a little bit more biased. But I've seen a lot of other Sand Hill Road VCs like not have to check that box.
It's interesting, you know, I think Sand Hill Road, traditionally a lot of the big success stories in technology have disrupted and gone around the system.
Yeah.
I think of the music industry as an example, or the media industry.
Right.
Do you think in healthcare it needs to work differently, where you need to work more closely with the stakeholders, whether those are hospitals or pharma companies or insurance companies? Do you think you have to work more within the system and collaborate more, or do you think it's still possible to completely disrupt and go around and create something completely revolutionary?
Yeah, the only segment that I think you can accomplish that in is direct to consumer. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some kind of golden app that's going to be sort of what I would call the WhatsApp, Instagram, you know, sort of
just all of a
Snapchat phenomena. Yeah. And if someone figures it out and does something, it could be something really fun. It could be something that sort of appeals to our vanity and our health.
Do you think it'll be consumer?
That's the only place that I feel like you can disrupt without stakeholder alignment. Because a big company, whether it's an employer or it's a payer, is going to be interested enough to get those many consumer eyeballs. It's sort of like, you know, it's very much the Snapchat story, right? If you can essentially get that much engagement, there are that many consumers/patients engaging on your platform, somebody's going to want to pick that up and they're going to pay a pretty price for it. And that's your innovation door. But you cannot do that on the provider and payer side. You just can't. You can't play those games. And I've learned that very much with Box. You know, now that I've left the venture side and I'm back over on the operational side, the number one thing that I've learned from Box, because we sell to big, you know, insurance companies and big hospital systems, large pharma, is, you know, we're playing inside that sandbox in a way that, you know, our product's being assessed in a way that is massive deep dive on security audits. You can't come in sort of from on a golden star from the left. You're going to have to go through a lot of sort of check marks. And I think we do that well, and that's why we've been successful. And I think a lot of startups that are moving into that space and selling to those folks, you need to get used to the sales cycles. You need to really prime that pump and understand how to do it. And we're kind of a machine at Box. We really do that well.
That's great. So what are you most excited about? What are you seeing today, or not even necessarily specific technologies, but where we are as an industry? What are you excited, and if so, why?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a really, really great amount of cool things happening, particularly on the data side. I still think big data is a huge flaw of a word in healthcare. It's, you know, if you look at a lot of other industries, we don't even know how to federate our databases yet to sort of get to the point. I mean, genomics is a whole other story, right? You've got a class card in genomics to say big data. But if you're dealing with provider and payer, we still can't get access to all the different sort of siloed databases. But what I'm excited about, and I know this isn't sexy, but healthcare isn't sexy. And a lot of people that go into healthcare want some kind of shiny, sexy app. And frankly, it's real basic workflow problems that have not been addressed on the enterprise side. just, we have such a low bar for UI workflow and
easily getting access to a picture or
an imaging study. I mean, it's really bad. So the things that I'm excited about, two trends. The first is I'm excited that we're getting a lot more muckety muck with data, and that could be data federation, data mapping, data warehousing. It could be, you know, anybody who's running queries, predictive analytics. It's very young. We're very young still there. But there's some interesting companies. I mean, if you look at a Health Catalyst, I mean, there's some cool companies that are just doing basic things that, you know, I want to take all my Epic data. I'm a 7-system hospital system, and I need to take all of my Epic data and warehouse it so I can write my own queries, right, to that data without being locked up by my vendor. Mm-hmm. And that's a relatively simple thing to do for IT, but it's actually hard to actually figure out how to write those queries. And be able to do all that. So we've got lots of really good vendors out there that are starting to do that and get more sophisticated. So that's one area. I have a second area as well. And that is, I think that because of what's happening with HEDIS and Medicare with all the patient satisfaction sort of surveys that are going out there, there is this sort of new trend. And I hear this a lot coming out of Box and selling to hospitals. There's definitely like an awareness now around, I don't want to get dinged by Medicare for low patient satisfaction scores. So it's more than just a branding exercise now. A, I don't want leakage. I need to keep my patients. I don't want them going out to other systems. I want tighter control on that relationship. And B, I need to figure out a much faster way to survey them beyond like a Prescani kind of snail mail. And that opens up this really interesting world to do better customer service in medicine. Our customer service, like you can order a tie on Amazon faster than you could get a drug approved.
That's crazy.
Right? Right? Yeah. So that makes me very excited. Like that, I hope that we could have a Disneyland experience at any one of our large academic medical centers where if I go to one of the Disney parks and I get like a bracelet put on me, you know, they know all of my ride preferences, what I want, they know which lines I'm gonna stand in. If I'm coming into a hospital, I'm gonna repeat customer. I want them to just hand me an iPad, put a wearable on me, and boom, I have a navigation system. I know where I'm going. I got all my records. That's the level of customer service that we need to be at.
Do you think this will happen with something like the Apple Watch coming into the market?
You know, I'm very excited about sort of what I would call all the platforms moving in the right direction.
Because there's a million of them.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, you know, Google, Apple, and Samsung are sort of the three biggest. Wearables in general, I'm still a little suspicious of. I think... you know, I just was at CES in Las Vegas last week. I'm sure you were there too. And I saw great things from, you know, Misfit Wearables and Shine, some cool stuff that they're doing with jewelry. It's amazing. But I think we're very early days. I mean, you know, it's a one way.
Until it's invisible and designed into your life in a way you don't even realize it.
Well, and I mean, I might be really cynical from my Google Health days, but, you know, even when we figured out how to get all the data into Google Health, and then we wanted to push it back to the system of record, whether that was the EHR or the PHR, like at Cleveland Clinic, or could be Blue Shield of whatever, right? Massachusetts, what have you. A lot of times they were like, oh, we really want to do interoperability and we want to be patient-centered. But when that data comes in, there's no fields to write to it. So they quarantine it and they don't really actually use it. I think with the wearables, it's great that we're picking up so many user-generated singles. But the truth is, you know, to be able to get the structured data from an EHR to influence the clinical insights around what you're collecting on your body and then sending it back and having that integrated into the system of record, we're far off from that. We're just at the beginning conversation with Epic and HealthKit and so forth.
So last question here. What predictions? Say big prediction for the year and then also longer term. Anything that you think will truly shock us or where do you think things are going?
The big prediction is that you're just going to see a tremendous amount of consolidation in the EHR space. So that's, you know, I think everybody would raise their hand and agree with that.
How quickly?
I think that's going to happen, radically soon on the ambulatory side.
Yeah.
I think we're approaching the end of the incentives, right? For meaningful use. So the sort of punishment, the penalties are going to start kicking in. And I just think that you're going to see some companies, not gain as much from the government money and the sort of what I call kind of the Cowboy West sales. Right. So there'll be a lot of consolidation on the ambulatory side. And I think rightfully so, because there's some great products out there, mm-hmm. particularly the cloud-based ones that are more modular in the way that they sell. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that works. And then the other thing I think is going to happen on the EHR side with acute care hospitals, you know, you've got your three market leaders, you know, Epic, Cerner, Meditech, right? And I think you're going to start seeing, they're already doing this. They're bleeding out into ambulatory through a community model where a hospital is the anchor and then they offer kind of a discounted EHR price. So you're going to start seeing a lot of blending of those two markets. Mm. And because hospitals are buying practices, like, you know, arm in arm,
right.
there's just going to be a really sort of interesting new model for how you're selling to the delivery system, particularly if you're a startup. It's going to be very interesting. There are going to be a lot more owned practices, a lot more strategic relationships where hospitals will have a strategic investment or an arm in a practice without, you know, violating any kind of Stark rules. So I think that that kind of environment is going to shift, and it's going to be better for healthcare. It's going to be easier for startups to sell to, more consolidation.
That's good news. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's so great to have you as one of the great pioneers in the industry, and glad you're still pushing everything forward. So thank you.
Yeah, I love what you guys are doing. Love your company. So really pleased to be here and pleased to see you guys' success.
Thank you, and see you at your party later today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.